Hi, I'm Allie Carter, and I am the author of The Blonde Who Came In From the Cold.
I've been familiar with Allie Carter for a long time, ever since the first book in her Gallagher Girls series published back in 2006. Allie's books have grown up alongside her audience, and she's back with this spy romance called The Blonde Who Came In From the Cold, a standalone sequel to her first novel for adults, The Blonde Identity. I recently spoke with Allie about her love of all things spy, how her books have evolved, and what's next for her. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Allie Carter. So I saw that your latest book is described as a standalone sequel, and I guess I'll ask this question in two parts. For those who have not read The Blonde Identity, how would you describe The Blonde Who Came In From the Cold?
It's actually the same description kind of either way. And so the shortcut that I like to give people is it's Mr. and Mrs. Smith meets The Hangover. So what if you were a tremendously skilled secret agent, spy who has left the life and you've left the person that you thought was the love of your life and you kind of swore to never see each other ever again. And then you wake up handcuffed to each other with no memory of how you got there or who is after you or what they want. And so these two people who, you know, the last person they ever wanted to see is the person they're now handcuffed to. And to make matters worse, that's also the only person they can trust.
So what about readers who have read The Blonde Identity? What can they expect?
They can expect the Alex story. When I started The Blonde Identity, I didn't know if I was going to want to do a sequel or not. I've had some bad experiences writing sequels in the past. They always turn out fine, but sequels are hard to write. And so I like to give myself sort of an out if I'm not feeling that sequel. And so I didn't sell a book two. I was just going to go in with hey, you know, this is a great book. Just going to do this one. And then Alex, the twin sister, kind of showed up on the page. And so The Blonde Identity is about a woman who wakes up with amnesia and she doesn't know where she is or who's after her, but she knows that somebody's trying to kill her. And a man appears over her and he's yelling, "Get up, Alex, run." And the only thing that I knew when I started writing that book was that wasn't Alex. And so everybody who's after her thinks that she is her identical twin sister who happens to be a spy, but she's not. And so that was the book one. That was Blonde Identity. And then when Alex, the actual spy, showed up on the page, I was just, you know, obsessed with her immediately. Like this is a woman who is very, very cool. She knows who she is. She doesn't take anything off of anybody. And there was a line in The Blonde Identity where the hero is telling our heroine, they're kind of brainstorming where Alex could be because she's missing and she's on the run. And he says, "Well, her arch nemesis got out of the game 5 years ago." And then at that point, I was like, wait, who is this guy who got out of the game 5 years ago? What is he to Alex? Why did he get out of the game? Why is he her nemesis? All of these questions kind of started bubbling up in my mind. And so that was the beginning, like the kernel or the seed of The Blonde Who Came In From the Cold. What if you had these two people who have this long history with each other, and yet they are stuck in the present day, literally stuck to each other, literally handcuffed together. And so we see them in the present day, but then we flash back to when they met 10 years ago, and then we're back to present day. And then we flash back to when they met 9 years ago and they did their first mission together. And we get to kind of, you know, lay that groundwork and get that backstory. And it, in that way, it's the most ambitious book I've ever written. Dual timeline is really hard, but I also love it a lot. And I'm really, really grateful that I got to tell Alex's story.
You know, I was going to ask about that because I did read The Blonde Identity in preparation for this. And in The Blonde Identity, the chapters changed perspectives between him and her. And for The Blonde Who Came In From the Cold, the chapters move between Alex and King. And then with this book, we're dealing with the multiple timelines. We're recollecting a lot. So talk to me about adding that particular challenge to the mix.
It was really, really tough. I have a lot of appreciation and respect for anybody who does it. One of the challenges just generally with the type of book that I write, especially with the romance aspect of them, is that your plot fuse and your character fuse have to be the same length. So Blonde Identity, for example, that whole book takes place over, I don't know, maybe 3 days, 4 days, something like that, because, you know, they're on the run. You can't do that for 9 months. You can't like have a little interlude and then they, you know, have some quiet time where they really get to know each other. It's kind of go, 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 go. And it's really challenging. And so I was reading Emily Henry's very, very brilliant People We Meet on Vacation. And she does the present day, 10 years ago, present day, 9 years ago kind of format. And I thought, oh, that's how I get my backstory. That's how you make the character length, character fuse longer. But you can't just do that. It can't just be, you know, back romantic stuff or interpersonal stuff. You also have to make whatever the plot line is in the past storyline dovetail with the plot line of the present storyline. So if they're walking down the street and they see something and they're like, oh, that reminds me, you know, of Cartagena. Then we flash back to Cartagena, or they see a tattoo and they're like, oh, yeah, that looks familiar. You know, now we know where we need to go. And then we flash back to the organization that's their symbol. And so everything in the present timeline has to really dovetail with everything in that past storyline. And then, like you say, you also have the two narratives. So I might be talking about present day him, present day her, past her. And then especially in the past, you're in a different location every time. And so you may be in the desert, Nevada. You may be in a, you know, downtown Cartagena, Colombia. You might be on a tropical island. You could be anywhere. And so it was both a lot of fun from a world building perspective. You know, I got to play in a lot of different sandboxes, but you also have to take time to really ground and root the reader so that they know where they are and it doesn't get too confusing.
No spoilers in this question, but your characters travel quite a bit all over the world, like you were just saying, and you're describing safe houses in many cities. Do the descriptions of these buildings and locales come from research or directly from your imagination?
A little bit of both. And a little bit like, so one of the scenes is takes place in a castle. And so I had the opportunity several years ago to spend a week in a castle. And so, you know, things like that, I can kind of draw from personal experience. But for the most part, I spend a lot of time thinking what would look cool, what would be cool. And so there's one segment that takes place on a black sand beach on this private island that's sort of a, you know, kind of like Madeira or someplace like that. And I have been to Cartagena, Colombia. And so that was the scene with it where they're buying some emeralds. And I had the opportunity to go to Cartagena a few years ago, not realizing that, you know, a lot of this was inspired by Romancing the Stone. And of course, Romancing the Stone, they're after a giant emerald. I did not know that Colombia was known for their emeralds. And so I'm like, oh, well, we're going to go to Cartagena and we're going to get some emeralds. And so some of those things I get to pull out of my own life experience. Some I just pull straight out of my imagination. Like, I've never been in a CIA safe house. I'm imagining what they would be like. Also, a big part of this book, when they actually meet in the past, they're on their way to the farm, which is Camp Perry, which is the CIA training facility, which they cannot confirm or deny actually exists. But it is pretty widely believed to be one of the premier CIA training facilities. And so clearly, obviously, I have not been to Camp Perry, but I was on book tour a couple of years ago, and I was doing a stop in DC, and a huge crowd came out. It was wonderful. And of course, I am probably best known for having written a young adult series for Spy Girls called the Gallagher Girls series years and years ago. Well, all of those girls grew up and they work for the FBI now and the Justice Department and the Pentagon. And several of them came through the signing line and said, I can't tell you where I work, but you are very popular there. And so I actually asked the question at that. I was like, so who here has been to the farm? And a lot of hands went up. And I'm like, okay, all of you need to hang back at the end of this. And I have questions. And so you just kind of piecemeal things together the best you can. And at the end of the day, you just have to make it fun for the reader. You just have to make it feel believable and not like something that the reader is going to bump up against being like, that sounds really impractical or that sounds kind of stupid. But you just have to let them kind of sink into that world like a warm bath.
You know, we met, I think it was 19 or 20 years ago. I was working at Watermark Books in Wichita, and you were living in Kansas at the time. You had just published I'd tell you I love you, but then I'd have to kill you, which is the first book in the Gallagher Girl series. And so I'm assuming it's safe to say you're drawn to spy thrillers. So what about the spy thriller interests you?
I honestly don't know. I'll tell you a story that I think illustrates this pretty well. So pre-pandemic, I used to work at a Panera Bread a lot. That's where I went and wrote all of my first drafts. And I was telling somebody one day that when I leave Panera, especially if I had like been on Twitter or something and said that I was writing that day, I always take a different route home at the end of the day. And they're like, "That, well, why do you do that?" And I said, "Oh, it makes you harder to kidnap." And I could not have been more serious. And this person just kind of busted out laughing. And they said, "Do you do that because you write about spies?" And I had to think about it for a second. I thought, no, I write about spies because I do that.
Oh, interesting.
I just have always been that person who's like, well, what if, you know, what if that van that just drove by? What if, you know, we're clearly under surveillance, you know, and maybe I'm not, that makes me sound like a kind of a conspiracy theory person, which I'm not hugely, but, you know, I just have always been drawn to spy media. And I love spy movies, which is something I have in common with the heroine of The Blonde Who Came In From the Cult. Like, you know, she and her sister were identical twins. Her sister was very sick when she was born as a baby and had to have a lot of surgery. They spent a lot of time in children's hospitals. And Alex passed that time watching spy movies. And so she makes a lot of like spy movie references and spy movie jokes. And those are all movies that I also grew up loving and watching.
So besides the Gallagher Girls series, you wrote other series for teens, Heist Society and Embassy Row, and even some books for middle grade readers. What prompted the move to writing for adults?
I had been doing it for a really long time. And I was on the phone one day with a good friend of mine, her name is Rachel Hawkins. And Rachel was a YA author who had just moved to adult. And we were talking, and this was kind of late pandemic, like quarantine was over, but life wasn't entirely back to regular life. And I said, you know, it's time. I've got to decide what I'm going to sell. I was almost out of contract. I said, do I sell another middle grade? Do I sell a YA? I can't, I'm torn between the two. And she said, you don't do either. You sell an adult. And I told her, I said, Rachel, I can't do that. Like I've spent, you know, 15 years building up a fan base in YA. And she said, the girls who read you 15 years ago when they were 15 are 30 now. This is where your fan base is. And that blew my mind, but she was entirely right. And that's the thing that I have heard most from readers when we announced The Blonde Identity is, you know, you were my favorite author when I was 12 and now I'm an adult and you can be my favorite author again. Like the books are growing up with me. And that has been a very great and rewarding aspect of this change. The other piece of it is with the type of book that I write and I'm just sort of naturally gravitating toward, that's hard to pull off for teens, especially for middle graders, because, you know, the sort of bane of my existence for a really long time was the sentence, why don't they tell an adult? So, you know, like, for example, in the middle grade, you've got this, you know, these kids, this band of like 12-year-olds who find an almost dead guy on the beach and they take him back to the house and they nurse him back to health. And the question is, why aren't these kids calling 911? Like, you really should take him to a hospital, but taking him to a hospital is a very boring solution for a middle grade novel. And then we notified the proper authorities, the end. Like there's no agency in that. That's not a fun ending. And so you're constantly trying to write characters who have agency, who are going to have to save the day. Everything's going to be in their hands in the end, but they're also not idiots. And that is a tough, tough needle to thread. And so when I was on the phone with Rachel that day and she said, you should move to adult, I said, what am I supposed to do? Dust off that old spy twins idea that I could never make work because they were 16. And just now, instead of, you know, being a part of a super secret organization for teenage spies, she's just a CIA agent. And then Rachel says, yeah, that's exactly what you do. And I was like, oh, that's exactly what I do. And so I had no lie been trying to write the spy twins story for YA audiences. And then for a while, I tried to do it for a middle grade audience and I could never make it work. And once I switched them to being 29, 30 years old, every problem went away. Every last one just dissolved. And so I think that just for the sort of action adventure romance space, there are a lot more opportunities and a lot more stories to tell realistically when you're writing them as adults.
You know, in the author bio for this book, it says, Ally Carter writes books about people who fall in love while trying to stay alive. You know, and if somebody asked me to describe your books, I don't think I'd lead with romance. I mean, it's always a great bonus, but more subtle. But I look at my advanced copy and I see a blurb by Ally Hazelwood, who writes romance set in the STEM fields. You write romance set in the action thriller world. Talk to me about the genre, this genre of romance that feels like it's blown up in the past few years, but you technically have been writing for decades, because I still remember when Cammie Morgan reached her hand into the trash can for that can of Dr. Pepper and looked up.
Exactly. So yeah, romance is one of those genres. I think romance and mystery, they're evergreen. Like, you know, going all the way back to Pride and Prejudice, you know, romance has just always been around. It will always be around. And it's vast. I think that's one of the things that really constantly kind of confuses and amazes people is, you know, you can look at like a Nora Roberts romance. You can look at Ally Hazelwood romance. You can look at Cressley Cole and people, you know, like the old True Blood books, you know, whether you're talking about a paranormal type of book, a mystery type of book, a thriller type of book, a just straight up contemporary small town, big city, you know, they cover the gamut. And I think the key that really, I think most romance writers and readers, you know, sort of the litmus test is there a happily ever after? Is there a central love story and a happily ever after? Or a happily for now? You know, these people are set. This is they're together. And what you get into a lot of times, you know, now that we have like romanticy or romystery and all of these sort of, you know, blend ups, those aren't necessarily new. People have been doing that for a long time. But, you know, through the miracle of book talk and through the miracle of, you know, the modern kind of social media landscape, you know, people are giving these things kind of a catchy name, and then they take on a whole new life. And it's been really wonderful to see readers embrace the romance genre. And I had the opportunity a couple of years ago to take my nieces and their friends to the Taylor Swift concert, to the Eras Tour. And so I'm driving along with this car full of teenage girls. And I asked them all, you know, what do you like to do? And the response from all of them was, we like to read. And I asked them, what do you like to read? And they all said, romance. And I don't know if that would have been the case, say, pre-pandemic. You know, I think they probably would have said YA, or they would have said, you know, something else. But now the romance genre has found its readership and its base, and it has really come into the mainstream in a way that has changed a lot of things. It's changed, you know, you're more likely, I think, to see romance, you know, in like a hardback book. My books are hardcover, which used to be unheard of. You have, you know, a lot of really great like film and TV adaptations coming down the pike. And so I think it's just a really exciting time, and I can't wait to see what happens.
So for you, what is the, you know, the biggest difference between writing for teens and writing for adults?
Why don't they tell an adult? It sounds so silly, but that's a questioning sort that kind of permeates everything. And so I find that my voice, like my authorial voice, is my voice. And I get this question from readers at events and, you know, Q&As and things all the time. And they're like, it's so weird to hear you talk because you sound just like your books. Like, yeah, that's because, you know, that's not a coincidence. And so that didn't change at all. Sort of the type of story that I write didn't change at all. There may be a little more adult language and adult content in the adult books than there are for my YA books. Not a ton, but a little bit. But the biggest difference is it's way easier to believe that these 30-year-olds are going to save the day than it is to believe that we're just going to trust these 12-year-olds to do it. And that has made my job infinitely easier.
Okay, same question, but different genre or medium, if you will. Talk to me about for you the difference between writing fiction and writing screenplays? And maybe you can tell about your work in that area.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, I got the bug because my dad was reading The Outsiders by Essie Hinton, and she was from about an hour away from where I grew up. And I thought, well, hey, that's what girls from here do, is we write books, and then Tom Cruise stars in the movie, and then, you know, bingo, you're done. But I was also a very, very reluctant reader. And so, but again, I loved movies. And so when I was in college at Oklahoma State University, I remember I would just go to the library, and screenplays, you can read one pretty quickly. There's a lot of white space on the page. And so I would go and I would either check out a ton of screenplays, or I would just sit on the floor of the library and read screenplays just for fun. That was what I originally thought I was actually going to write. And so those were the craft books that I bought. Those were the, you know, the things that I sort of wrote and have a stack under my bed that I hope nobody ever reads, and everything. And so it was kind of took me a while. And, you know, after I was living in Kansas for a while and really making good use of the Chanute Public Library, that I transitioned over to novels. But the screenplay thing was still in the back of my head. And for a while there, I had a book that was due every like December 1st or December 15th. And so I'd finish that book and then I would just crash, and I would do nothing but like eat pizza and wear stretchy pants and watch Hallmark movies for two solid weeks until Christmas happened. And about a week into that process, I'd get kind of punch drunk and I'd start telling my friends, I could write one of these in a weekend, you know? And so finally one of my friends was like, okay, then do it already. I was like, I will. And so I sat down and I wrote a screenplay for what I thought would be a Hallmark movie. But I just, you know, I was like, you know, because one of the sort of Hallmark approved occupations is author. And they never really get the author stuff right. So I was like, I'm going to write one about an author who goes and stays in a castle, because I had just stayed in a castle. And so I had all these kinds of things. And I sat down, I wrote it, and I kind of forgot about it. And then I was at a conference, and a dear, dear friend of mine who is a writer and also used to be an agent in Hollywood. And I found that screenplay on my laptop, and I was kind of reading it to her. I was like, listen to this terrible thing that I wrote. And I was reading it off to her, and she was like, actually, that's kind of good. She's like, why don't you send that to me? And so I did. And then I hate to tell this part of the story because it is so cliche, but she slipped it to a friend who, you know, was a producer of this type of movie, and they optioned it. And, you know, I still can't believe it got made. They called me in fall of 2019 and were like, we really love it. We've got Brooke Shields who wants to do it, but she's obviously a lot older than the heroine that you had written. It's going to need a pretty significant rewrite. And I said, go do whatever you need to do. Just, you know, let me know if I can help. So they hired a bunch of writers to rewrite it. And then, what you know, they were supposed to film in April of 2020. And so the world shut down, and I was like, well, that was a nice dream while it lasted, but okay. And then later that summer, like August, September, I got a weird email wanting my banking information. I was like, I am definitely not sending this random person my banking information. But when you do a contract with somebody like Netflix, the contracts are never in Netflix's name. There's always like a bunch of shell corporations and stuff involved. And so there was the name of that shell corporation was in that email. I was like, well, that's a weird coincidence. So I just forwarded it to my attorney and said, is this legit? And he's like, oh, it looks like you've got a green light movie. Congratulations. And they'd gone over to Scotland. They made a quarantine bubble, and it was Brooke Shields and Carrie Elwes. And the movie was A Castle for Christmas. And I still could not believe it got made, but it did. And I am so far removed from that process at this point that I'm just happy for everybody who got it made, because it was really kind of a miracle that it happened at all.
So now that you have moved into writing for adults, is this where you'll stay for a while, do you think?
I think so. Like, I would never say never. You just never know. This, the industry is weird. Life is weird. The world is weird. I may get an idea for a YA book tomorrow that I just cannot sleep until I have written it. But right now I can say I'm very content. And as I brainstorm ideas and I think about the future, it's probably more adult books. I had a book come out last fall called The Most Wonderful Crime of the Year, which was kind of a cozy mystery romance hybrid. And I had a blast doing that. I love a cozy mystery and I love a romance, and like putting them together was kind of a dream come true. And so I would love to do more books like that. I would never say that I'll never do another spy book because that tends to be kind of in my DNA. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I'm really enjoying being in the adult space.
Well, the book is The Blonde Who Came In From the Cold. Allie Carter, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Allie Carter, author of the book The Blonde Who Came In From the Cold, which was published by Avon. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.